If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Oh, hello. Welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for you guys.
And Allison...
Happy Pride?
Happy month. Pride. We're doing it. We're recording this Friday, May 26th. So for you, it's Pride. We are in the past communicating through the ether, I suppose.
Are we in the past? Yeah, right. Yeah, we're in the past.
We're currently in the past.
Oh, boy.
Some might even call it the present. happy Pride month. Boy, I'll tell you, this is the week, in case horrible has happened last week, which seems incredibly possible.
I mean.
We're coming off the Target pulling its Pride items.
Christ.
Boy, I'll tell you, as a queer person, you don't like to see that.
Nope.
Doesn't seem good at all.
No. To cave to the fucking psychotic, fascist, homophobic, transphobic minority feels really bad and dangerous.
Yeah. So we thought the perfect time to introduce to you what Crooked Media, which is, in case you are an older listener and you just continue listening after we've joined Crooked, they're launching an initiative this Pride that will carry on through the rest of the year. And I guess as long as we need to have this.
Seems like forever.
Yeah, but basically, we've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Obviously, the right has launched a full-on anti-trans onslaught. In every red state, trans and queer people are under attack. And, like Allison said, they are the minority, but they are vocal, and they are increasingly erratic.
Wow.
So, we're all trying to figure out what can we do, especially as people in blue states, to help people. And because in the reality, there are more of us. And in fact, there's never been more support for gay, trans, and queer people, and especially gay, trans, and queer youth. Sorry, I'm going to cry. Who have to deal with all of this. And not that things haven't been bad in the past, but it's unfortunate, even the past year, how, volatile the situation has become. So it is up to us who have any sort of power, any sort of platform, to make it very clear how much we support queer and trans youth across America today and every day.
And obviously us, Hallie and Allison, do so much. And that's why also our friends at Vote Save America, which is the political action arm of our beloved daddies, Crooked Media, and podcasts like Pod Save America and Love It or Leave It, have created the Fuck Bans, Leave Queer Kids Alone Fund. By the end of Pride Month, they're working to fundraise $50,000 to support organizations on the ground in states that are banning care and targeting trans families. I'm thinking that's got to really include Florida, that horrific state. And they're including organizations like Transgender Law Center, the Trans Justice Funding Project, and the Trans Youth Equality Foundation.
So if you would like to contribute or learn more about these organizations or just feel like you have some place to put, like, you know, your ambient terror and what's going on, please head to votesaveamerica.com/fuckbans. You can help them donate, help us hit our goal. And in doing so, I hopefully, show the GOP, fuck you, we don't agree with this. And we will push back as hard as we need to. So again, that website is votesaveamerica.com/fuckbans. And, we appreciate you. And I, queer person, I especially do. I'm sorry. You knew I wasn't going to get through this without crying. But
no,
we really do
not.
Appreciate. Go check it out.
Yes.
And we'll talk about it, throughout Pride, obviously, mm-hmm. if you're coming to this late.
Yes.
But yeah. So I guess let us get started.
Now that I've
already cried. Allison, how are you doing? Do you want to...
Fine.
How's your life?
I had like stress dreams last night where the things that were stressful were like me being difficult. And it was like,
oh, fascinating. You as your own nightmare. That's
truly,
really interesting.
It was like me and two friends, and we were at a thing that we had paid for, and like I got mad at somebody irrationally and made us all leave, and we like lost the money. Like it was like, it was really fun. I was like, I'm having a nightmare, but like I'm the villain. And I woke up so unrested.
That's
then also
so
the part of it had anthrax to do. Then it was just some standard.
Wow.
Standard
that's
horrors.
Deep in there. That's what it sounds like.
Some old bosses of mine kind of like folded into it. And I don't know. My dad was there. It was really bad.
Oh boy. I was like, were you naked and your teeth were falling out?
No, that sounds like better than what was happening.
someone was tweeting, they're like, I don't believe that everyone has, like, teeth falling out dreams. They can't be that common. I have had,
I've had that dream
dozens of times. I don't know what that is. I think it might be because we're all clenching our teeth, like, during the, those dreams. So your body is, like,
a physical.
Yeah, like, thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, how are you?
I'm okay, other than my you know, my general emotional, you know, all over the placeness. I will say, Allison, and this could be a horror movie, there's a smell in my apartment, and I haven't located it, and I'm just going to spend the weekend finding it.
It's, what kind of smell?
It
what genre
smells,
of smells?
I would say a food smell. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's like when
you know
I had
me.
The sandwich smell.
Exactly. And where was the sandwich? Should we find out?
Never found anything, no. And it is gone now, so.
Boy. Yeah, well, probably
just a ghost eating some pastrami in the corner of my apartment somewhere. Then he finished and left.
I'm unfortunately a nearly 40-year-old woman where it very well could be that some kind of food fell somewhere and I can't find it. That seems of a piece.
Absolutely.
But,
oh, God, that's annoying.
So I'm just going to spend the long weekend relaxing and finding where the smell in my apartment fucking is coming from.
Combing your apartment inch by inch to find what food is causing the smell.
Yeah. Well, so I'll keep everybody posted.
Let us know if you find it.
Oh, absolutely. And also, this month, we, of course, will be doing a live show, as we always do. It will be held Sunday, June 18th, and we will be doing Ari Aster's latest, Beau is Afraid. Now, I'm not afraid because either this, I'm going to love this movie, or based on every single person I know who's seen this movie already, they hated it. And that makes me even more excited to do a movie that is so seemingly so universally reviled. I'm thrilled. So if you could please join us Sunday, June 18th.
7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Moment.co/ruined is where you can buy your tickets and also where you'll go to watch the show. Obviously, Patreon members at the $20 tier, you already have tickets that will be in your inbox that morning. And it'll be another great live show. If you've been to other ones, you know that we have a blast and a half. We get a little blasted. And the chat's fun. There's merch. Like, just come.
Let's kick things off on this Pride Month. And I wasn't, you know, I wanted to approach Pride Month from a couple different perspectives. Last year we did High Tension, mm-hmm. and we got, I thought, a very fair email, but it was about sort of like doing horror movies in which queer people get and trans people get murdered. Is that a celebration? Now, obviously, I am biased because this is my favorite genre. So I'm like, well, but I understand, especially this year, it's like having that depiction, I completely understand people having a problem with it.
Totally.
That being said, I also thought I would like to do a movie up top where there is a lot of queer fucking. I wanted there to be sex because there are, of course, obviously so many different queer horror movies, but a lot of the queerness is sort of like
ambient.
Like imbued in vampirism or like sort of like implied. And I wanted to be like, there is at least, they're just people fucking on screen. You know what I mean?
Great.
And whether that's explicit. So the movie I picked is from 2018. It's a French film called Knife Plus Heart. It could be Knife and Heart, but it's stylized with a little, you know, like cross sign.
Yeah.
And it is directed by Yanz Gonzalez, and it stars Vanessa Paradis, who I've never seen anything, and I thought she was great in this.
I haven't ever seen her in something. That was, like, kind of exciting to be like, oh, I only know you from, like, red carpets.
And the it's based on, it follows a lesbian gay porn director in the late 70s in France. And it is loosely based on an actual person, Anne-Marie Tensi, who is a female producer specializing in gay pornography who worked in France in the 70s and 80s. So this is, I was like, okay, loosely based on a real producer for gay porn. Super fun. Now, this is in the giallo style. And if you're familiar with giallos, which we need to do giallo January, but we haven't done it yet. But
okay, we have to do that.
But Allison, just to like catch you up, it is an Italian sort of a subgenre of horror that is more of a murder mystery, but it's also very gory, and it is playing with a lot of themes of sex and gender, typically. And it's sort of like playing with what was in the culture, sort of like panic about those issues and about masculinity. Mm-hmm. And here we are back at it, I suppose. Well. And so What better time to revisit those things? So this is sort of an homage or a reference to whether it's the most successful of that, who's to say? But I thought let's start it out here. And boy, there's a lot of mostly goofy, darkly comedic gay sex in this, which again is an interesting way to approach things. But I don't know, I kind of vibed with it.
Yeah.
So before we begin, we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. Allison, what do you think of the trailer for Knife and Heart?
Yeah, let's say Knife and Heart this, because that's how I read it. And Knife plus Heart feels like a rebus. This remind like the style and kind of like the like light camp to it and like reminded me of like a Pedro Almodovar film. Like
yes,
the bright colors, kind of the like. There was something about it that was just like giving, and like I studied him in college. I'm a huge fan of his work, so I was like, oh, I like this. I don't know if I could watch this because I do feel it gets quite terrifying, but I loved the vibe, and also it was scary. So I don't know how to reconcile those two things in my brain.
What was the image or moment in the trailer that sort of jumped out to you? It's like, okay, this is now we're seeing something a little scary.
I don't remember something that, like, stuck out. Was there something in the trailer that would have, like, registered?
No. Oh. I just wanted to get your opinion.
Oh.
Color for the listener.
I don't feel like, you know, it's like, I know they're talking about, like, a murder. Like, somebody's been, like, also the birds being part of it.
I was thinking. Allison, I forgot so for a moment, many.
Because I was just, like, hung up on the colors. But the birds and, like, the finding the feathers. It reminded me of, and obviously when we get through the plot, maybe it is or is not similar, but like when people talk about the true crime case, The Staircase, and they're like, the owl did it. And it's like,
ooh,
that's not what happened.
I
but
love
boy,
that.
I believe it.
people really push that. And it's like, well, guys, what's the likelihood of that? Also, then you find out that the editor of the movie, the docuseries, ended up dating the accused for years, like while they were making it. And I was like, that seems unethical. And then I want to say somebody, I don't want to cast aspersions on another, but I believe there's another prominent docuseries where you find out that somebody involved in production also dated somebody in the case. I'm like, what is happening?
I feel like I remember hearing that about something. I don't remember it being this, but maybe it was this. But anyway, the bird didn't
bizarre?
Do it.
Yeah, the bird didn't do it. It's convenient that it's edited to make me think a bird fucking did it. Meanwhile, the person editing is fucking the person who's accused of murder.
Yeah.
Anyways, that guy's out of prison. Maybe he didn't do it. We don't know. We don't know. We're not a true crime podcast, okay? No. We can't weigh in on this.
Nope. We just do fake crime.
We do fake crimes, and boy, there are a lot of them in this.
There are so many. The bird stuff, I was unnerved, especially when you first catch, like, the bird that, like, is in the window, and it's like...
Oh, yeah, and these birds are getting up to all sorts of mischief. They're actually a pretty pivotal part of the plot, unfortunately for you.
Oh, that sucks.
we always like to take a baseline scary, to see where Allison is at with sort of like the entry level, frights. Mm-hmm. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of queer trauma?
The trauma part, very scary. And especially, you know, living in America right now, not being a queer person myself, but certainly having all of the sympathy for everybody, like just to, oof. Scary.
Yeah.
Any kind of othering that creates trauma, which is most, is like so, like, it's like an extra darkness than just kind of like the trauma of like person-to-person violence or something like that.
Yeah, and I feel like especially like, and again, it's so, I would say it's so particular to the family, but it's also like this is the success of the queer movement is that like more families are more accepting. But this of course is set in Paris in 1979. So that of course will be an element where it's just like, and again, like that's what they're trying to do with trans kids now is like, break up families, you know, like drum up this like
legitimately actually breaking up families and causing them to move.
Yeah. And it's So that's sort of where we're getting into. Okay. That's not, okay. There's a lot of other stuff going on in the movie. So we will unpack it as we get there. And what would you like to guess the twist in the movie Knife and Heart, Allison?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess that the murderer, who I don't think is the producer, but maybe somebody that she's close to, has trained the birds.
Ooh, okay.
To kill people so it looks like birds killed them.
Okay, I love this.
But in reality, he directed them to, like, the birds are like hitmen.
I like that. I think that's perfect. Birds as assassins. Let's get into it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we see a film reel and a projector, and we immediately see two young men clearly having sex in what is clearly a porno. So, you know, it's sort of lit. It's like golden sunlight, natural. You know, again, it's the late 70s. So,
gorgeous.
You know, they're fucking in a clearing. And then there's a third guy watching and jerking off. Classic gay porn. We then see this, one of the stars, he's a young blonde man, his name is Carl. One of the stars of the porno is at like an S&M gay club in Paris. He's dancing with some guys. And this is like, you know, balls to the wall, fucking check your clothes at the door level shit, right? So when he looks over at a guy in a full leather mask rubbing his dick through his pants, he's not immediately, like, if that was at like McDonald's, yes, you'd be like, oh, okay, something's going on.
Right. It's about context when exactly. It comes to rubbing your dick in a leather mask.
Absolutely. And so if you're already at the club, it is unfortunately like harder to catch the subtle clues that this guy might be up to no good. And the band's playing, and everyone has different masks on. So there's a band playing. There's like a shirtless guy who has like an eagle head, and there's sort of like a green pig man, and everyone's in leather. And there's a guy just getting a blowjob in the middle of the dance floor and just like straight fucking. So again, this is the kind of place, if you want to put on a leather mask and rub your dick, this is the place to do it.
Yeah. If anywhere here.
So poor Carl, unfortunately, sees this, is like, I need to find out more about this guy. And the masked guy sort of signals him to follow him out into the alley, which is funny to me because there's a guy getting his knob slobbed literally 2 feet from you. You don't have to go to the alley, but they wanted a little bit of privacy, I suppose.
Going to happen in the alley when you're already in the middle of what seems to be the throes of a great sex party.
I know,
party.
It seems like an orgy is about to break out here. We're like, no. You know, there's too much distractions, too much going on. So Carl follows the masked man out into the alley. Allison, he's immediately set upon by a blackbird. A blackbird immediately flies at Carl. I would have screamed and immediately run out of the S&M club. But he's like, it's okay. There's just a bird. And then he and the masked man, you know, sort of start to engage. And we cut back and forth between the porno, which we've seen before, which is very brightly lit, natural, sort of like two men in the woods frolicking, back to this sort of back alley stink fest, right? Okay. So, but there is like the brightness and sort
but
of the
bird is there.
There's a bird ostensibly watching this, right? So imagine that. I don't know how you feel about that.
I can't. I can't. Not bad. I feel bad.
And while we're watching this, Allison, we see a woman's hands with bright red nails cutting film, ostensibly editing the porno film that is we're cutting to. But we're seeing the person putting it together. The masked man and Carl make it to a second location, and we see the masked man has tied Carl face down onto the bed. And then the masked man sort of tears off Carl's tidy whities, which absolutely would not work. You cannot do. I do not believe you can just rip them off.
No. They're not like tearaway pants. Like they're sturdy, unless they're very old. But then you would know.
They look brand new. I was thinking that, like, you'd be hauling Carl off the fucking bed. Like it would not come off. But eventually he does rip off these undies and jam them in Carl's mouth. So as far as Carl knows, things are going great. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, things are really panning out for me. And unfortunately, the masked man reaches into his pants and pulls out a huge black dildo. And again, Carl's like, all right, seems good.
Yeah, this is all what we kind of came here for.
But I didn't even, unfortunately, about the dildo. A big thumbs up for the dildo. Unfortunately, just as they're about to get absolutely rotten, Allison, and you're going to be completely shocked by this, I'm sure, the masked man clicks the dildo like the world's least effective pen, and a switchblade knife shoots out the end. Oh, you hate to see it, Allison. Because that's also in the movie Seven. I hated it then, hate it now.
Yeah.
Carl tries to scream, but you know, it's as we all know, it's impossible to scream when you have tidy whities jammed in your mouth. And unfortunately, obviously. And it's shot in a way that I appreciated the discretion, the cutaway of it. We see the masked man bring the knife down and start stabbing Carl over and over again. And his screams start blending with the cawing of birds, Allison. And we see that the man with the mask, it's a leather, like a brown leather mask with eyes, and his mouth is cut open, but you can't see his lips. You just see his teeth. And it looks like as he's screaming, he's cawing, Allison. He's making the sounds of birds as he screams.
See, we should not be aligning with our avian enemies. Like, they are not our friends.
Yeah, this guy's definitely on their side. He's too far gone. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He's on the side of the birds. That's the wrong side.
And as if you weren't clear, like, what side he was on, when he's done murdering poor Carl, we see on the windowsill right behind the masked man is another black bird just fucking watching it go down like the fucking pervert birds are. Allison, imagine you got murdered and a bird saw it.
I'm imagining that if I get murdered, a bird will see it.
The ultimate indignity, Allison. I can't even imagine.
Yes, truly embarrassing.
We cut to a very distraught blonde. This is Vanessa Paradis. She's in a shiny, like, forest green, like, vinyl trench coat or shiny leather. She looks incredible. Like,
incredible.
Platinum bob, blonde bob, running through a darkened underpass. And it says on the screen, Paris, 1979. And that, as far as I know, is the only way to get around Paris, is just frantically crying and running in a fabulous trench coat.
In a coat, yes.
She runs into a telephone booth and she calls the woman whose hands we saw cutting the red nails. It turns out her name is Lois. And we see Louise. Her name is Louise. They spell it Lois, and I have to remind myself, it is Louise. Louise answers the phone and the blonde woman says, "Louise, are you there?" And you could tell from the way Louise sighs that they are exes. Like, it is like perfect. She's like, "Oh my God, are you calling me at work again?
This bitch." Yeah.
And Louise tells the blonde, whose name is Anne, she says, "It's 5 a.m. I am still at work trying to finish another porno. Please, you can't keep doing this." And Anne's sobbing. She's also clearly tanked. She's like, "I woke up alone. Please, I need you." Also, she was clearly out of the bars. Like, she wasn't asleep.
Right.
And Louise says, "You're totally loaded. I can't keep doing this with you. And, you know, please." And she's Anne's begging Louise, like, "Caress me with your voice. Hold my hand. Come get me." And Louise says, "Anne, we have to stop. We agreed we would only ever see each other at work." Allison, they both work in the gay porn industry.
It's got to be a small world in Paris in the 70s.
And you're both lesbians. Like, I mean, if you're the only two lesbians, of course you're going to end up together at some point.
Right.
And, you know, Louise is like, "We fought and we broke up in anger. You told me no more booze, but it's just, we're just going, it's just, this, we have to get out of the cycle. I'm sorry, you know?" But Anne's like, "No, it'll be different this time. Why don't you come pick me up and we could go drinking all night like we used to?" And Louise is like, "Did you just hear what I said to you? We can't do this." Also, it's sort of like the idea of, like, they've been together 10 years. They were together 10 years and have broken up.
Yeah.
So, like, this is obviously, like, really painful for both of them. But, like, Louise is trying to maybe move on and have more of an adult life because they're, like, clearly in their 40s. And Anne is just stuck. Anne is just there. You know what I mean? She's an alcoholic, you know?
Right.
And Louise tells her, "You need to go home and sober up." And Anne freaks out. She's like, "What if I was dying? Like, you wouldn't care if I was dying."
"T'es une chienne de me laisser alors que je suis perdue et que j'ai peur comme jamais. Et si j'étais en train de crever, hein, tu ferais quoi?"
"Let me go over and smell your skin one last time." And Louise is like,
"Yeah,
you're
not making a case for yourself as like a reasonable visitor at this hour."
Exactly. Call me at 9 p.m. not drunk and maybe we could talk about it.
Yeah.
This is the problem, right? And Louise says, it's like devastating, and she says, "It's over. My heart has gone dry." Oh, the knife in the heart indeed. And Louise hangs up, and Anne slumps to the bottom of the phone booth, which you always want to do after a breakup call. It's just being in a phone booth slumping.
Anytime I have a call that doesn't end in good news, I would like to just kind of, like, slowly slump over in a phone booth or kind of, like, you know, slide down a door frame.
Exactly. So people know how you're feeling.
Exactly. Telegraph that to the world.
The next day we're on set, and it's a very, again, it's 1979, so it is three guys in, like, colored briefs. Just making out, sort of, you know, just having a good time. And we see Archibald, who's Anne's best friend, and he's directing them. And he's like, "Good job, Terry. Far out, yellow briefs," just encouraging them.
Love it.
Anne rolls up. She is stinking drunk, and she storms up the stairs to the editing bay. And we see Archibaldi calls the scene and says, when we come back, we're going to take a break, and I want you all stiffer than President Jussard. And I don't know anything about the president, but I'm assuming he was stiff.
Yeah.
So these guys get at it. Meanwhile, Allison, we see Anne go up to the editing bay. Instead of going to talk to Louise, she goes and she stares through a hole in the wall at Louise. It's like, again, this is why Louise doesn't want to be with you, girl.
Yeah, you're not making a good case for yourself for a reunion of any kind.
Also, you see it from the other side. You absolutely can see a human eyeball.
Like, yes, of course.
Because when you put your head there, the light goes away. She knows that you're doing this, dude. But a man stops by. I do not know. This was like hard to identify what the character names were because a lot of the IMDb people don't have photos. So I'm just going to say this person is the assistant director. So the AD,
yes, that's fine.
He stops by with the dailies. So that's how much porn they're fucking cranking out. We got the dailies.
Dailies? Wow.
And Louise is there till 5 in the morning. So, I mean, I guess to be fair, this is probably like the time where you actually could be making money in porn, like in this way.
Yeah.
They're like, we got to get this smut out there. And Louise says, ugh, every day it's the same old shit. You know, and this is going to get in Anne's head. Like, what could I do to sort of reinvent the wheel to impress my ex-girlfriend who has made it very clear she doesn't want to be with me? Meanwhile, we see Archibald directing the three men. They're sort of getting ready to go to Pound Town. And finally, Anne, even though she's hungover and has her own stuff, she steps up as director. But her method of directing is just screaming at these men, which I've never been in a porn or been to a porn set. But I just got to imagine that's the last thing you need if you're trying to have sex.
Yeah.
And so I'm being like, come on, loosen up out there.
Kills
you know?
Yeah, nothing kills the mood like getting yelled at.
Yeah. And she yells it
in that way.
I'm going to say, I know I'm pronouncing this wrong, but the person's name is T-H-I-E-R-R-Y. I'm going to say Terry. It might be Thierry.
Terry?
Think it's Terry?
Yeah, it's
I'm going to say Terry then, and hope it's close enough. And if your name is Terry, I really am trying. And she screams at one of the three guys, because he can't get hard. She screams, lay off the heroin. You're barely hard. It's like, my God, woman, like, give them, like,
we're
5 minutes here. And one of the other guys says, it's not the dope, it's his paycheck. And it's like, okay, so this is the kind of porno we're headed towards now, where we're shooting a porno that the actors are having sex while having labor arguments with management. That seems like where we're headed at
this
point.
That's a deeply French thing, I feel.
Absolutely.
Like, to be, like, very caught up in, like, fair wages and socialism, which is, like, what that
country
is all about
in a great way. Right, we're
going
to pick at this fucking porn set, bitch. Like, you cannot scream. And she's like, if you're not happy, you can leave. I've got boys lined up around the fucking block to replace you. And she storms off to have a cigarette. And this all feels very French to me. And Archibald calls their fluffer. And the fluffer, it does not have a human name. They call him the Mouth of Gold. And because he can get anybody hard. So
I mean, good for him.
Good for him. And he's living the dream, it seems like. He's having a great time. And so he comes out and he's sort of like an older, fatter man who has honed his skill. And he gets to work on Thierry so they could get to shooting. And meanwhile, she's smoking and she's like, we wasted so much time. She's like, well, you screamed at them so much, it's going to take even more time.
Right.
And then she looks up and Louise is on the upper balcony also smoking. And they're like smoking and looking at each other.
Now hot. But, you know.
And I said, again, the only lesbians working in gay porn at the time, of course, this is what's going to be happening. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Archibald, after the shoot, drives Anne to his house. Again, she's clearly, like, so fucked up for the breakup. She's, like, barely hanging on. She dozes off in his car, and we then see the first of, she keeps having different dreams, Allison. Mm-hmm. So we see a forest, and it's overexposed. So when you see a bird, it's not the jet black birds we've been seeing. It's a white bird, which is even scarier. Oh.
I agree that is scarier.
You hate to see it. Not as much as you hate to see a dildo knife, but
No, dildo knife is worse than bird, but only marginally.
Yeah, dildo knife number one, bird number two.
Yeah.
We see a bird land on a hand in the dream, and then a knife swinging down, and a burning barn, and a young man with curly hair who we realize must be the masked killer, or we're supposed to think it's a masked killer, because the mask, it covers his face, but then he has this, like, incredible mop of hair, which I think if you're a killer with great hair, you should do. It's not like a ski mask. It's, like, cut off so you can see his hair.
You want to show off your assets, but it will make you much more identifiable in the world.
Yes, exactly.
Also,
so,
you know, take your pick of, you know, priorities here.
And she wakes up.
I would go hair.
She wakes up and she tells Archibald, pull over quick. Next thing you know, she is walking through a quarry and she finds a young man who looks like the man in her dreams. His name is Nans, and we see he has a beautiful mop of curly brown hair, and he's a gorgeous young man.
Yeah.
And she's like, I will give you $2,000 for 5 days of work, because that's how much he said he made per month. She said, it's $500 a scene. And, you know, he's like, well, what's the catch? And she's like, well, it is boys on boys. And he's like, I'm no fairy. Thank you very much. And she's like, hey, what's the worst that could happen? You have a little pleasure. And also that no one's going to find out because the only people who watch these videos are other gay people.
Right.
Who's going to see it? So she writes her number. She gives him, like, I don't know, some bill, let's say a $100 bill, writes her number on it and tucks it in his pants. And she's like, you give me a call. She heads back to the car and she tells Archibald, I just found a gem. He's a fawn amongst wolves. And he looks exactly like, and I'm going to try to pronounce his name, F-O-U-A-D. Fouad.
F-O-U-A-D?
Yes.
I don't know. Food?
Food. Foud? Foud?
Foud?
I would say Foud.
Foud.
Foud. Who is their former leading man. And Archibald's like, oh, Foud, he was incredible, but I think he joined the Foreign Legion, so we don't have access to him anymore. She's like,
sure.
Well, this guy, he's going to take Foud's place. And now her thing is, you know, like, these regular porn actors, they can't even get hard while I scream and berate them. Like, right. We got to find common people like this who got character. Like, it'll make our films more realistic and real to life if it's based in real life. So that's sort of her new angle. And she even said, oh, it's going to blow Louise away. And Archibald gives her a sign like, girl, honey, that's not going to get her back. Worth a shot, though. So they go back to Archibald's house. Anne passes out immediately on the couch, and Archibald reads a magazine. He gets a phone call. It is Inspector Morcini, and he's trying to reach one Miss Anne Perez. And apparently it's about Jean-Marie Devernay.
Jean-Marie needs to be a person.
Jean-Marie. Right. A Jean-Marie versus a Jean-Marie. That's a buddy comedy.
I need it.
Starring Annie Potts and I don't know, Timothée Chalamet. So, and Archibald says, Jean-Marie Duvernay, you mean Carl? And I love that Carl's porno name is Carl because it's just like, you don't want to be Jean-Marie, but I have a porn name.
I'm not in France. I don't know what the, you know, context was there.
So Anne heads down to the police station because she worked with him and she's like, yes, Carl was one of my favorite leading men. He had just done his seventh or eighth film, and it kind of seems like he was maybe done. And Martini says, well, what kind of films are they? She's like, you know what kind. You wouldn't be asking me if you didn't fucking know. And she said, unless it just arouses you to hear it from a woman's lips. And the other younger cop goes, And he says, well, I regret to tell you that Carl was stabbed multiple times in the rectum. Allison damn near killed him. It actually did kill him.
I mean,
In the police station, Anne opens her purse and just opens up. What is the smallest volume of liquor? Is that a pint? Where you could like hold it in your hand? A fifth. Opens up a fifth and just starts drinking from it, which again seems very French.
Very French.
And she says, well, just tell me about Carl. What was he like? And she's like, well, I only know about the context of him being a fucking insanely good porn star. And it's like, he was insatiable. Last month we shot an orgy. It was five men on Carl. And Carl had this ability, which most people didn't have, which is like to give himself entirely, to actually be free on film and like in this intense sexual situation. And her like deep admiration is like, that is a form of love. Like he gave himself to the film. And the police are like, okay, well, it's probably not going to help us find him, but thank you for telling us. We meant more like how tall he was, but okay, yeah. Sure. You know, like,
lots
where did he hang
texture,
out?
But not the most helpful.
Yeah, like, what gay S&M clubs do you hang out at?
Yeah.
I think I've told this story before, but I always feel so bad that one time I saw, like, a missing cat poster, and it had the cat's likes on it. And it was like legs being in the sun and playing with yarn. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to find your cat. I'm going to yell and be like, hey, do you like
going
the
to a
sun?
Yarn store?
And then I turned around, and literally there's a person holding more of the flyers and a roll of tape, and they had just put it up, and I was just making fun of it in front of them. And I was like, oh, no, but I'll still look. But I just felt terrible. But also, I was right. You know what I mean? I was like,
well,
I can't.
Yeah. You need a last scene. You need a scared of people.
Photo.
Or comfortable. Like, you need actual information, not just, like, interests.
But I imagine that person was frantic, so maybe they're like, I'll just put everything down and people can sort it out. So
he likes the sun. If you see him outside, it's him.
Yeah, and don't chase it down. So, Allison, we cut to the porn set. And what Anne is staging is, she is now making a porno out of her own police interrogation. So Archibald okay. isn't sort of a light drag. He has her forest green, incredible trench on. He's playing her in drag.
Okay.
And then we have the two other porn stars, the two other gentlemen. One of them is Valentin, and the other one is, oh God, what is his name? Jose El Hombre. And they're playing the cops. And of course, in reality, the cops are very professional. These cops are significantly less professional, Allison.
Yes, I would imagine.
And, of course, you know, they're sort of saying, like, oh, you came down here. We know what kind of filthy movies you make. And she's like, excuse me, I'm not some sort of slut. I am a murder witness. And one of the cops starts to, like, runs his foot up Porno Ann's leg. And he's wearing, like, an old gym sock with a hole where his toe is sticking out, which I thought was such a funny, like, that's the, if you look down and someone's foot is coming up your leg, that's the last thing you want to fucking see.
No, that's the worst foot.
The worst foot in the world. But then starts giving, again, Archibald as Anne, starts giving him a foot job and sort of being like, tell us what you know. And he, and tell us, like, what was your relationship with Carl? We know that you were fucking him. And then Porno Anne's like, it's true. He was begging me midday. He was begging me every fortnight. He was making me explode. And then so there's a foot job under the table. And okay. then I guess because they didn't want this to be, they should have just fucking shot this as if it was a porno. Because
right.
in order to sort of shoot around the fact that, like, everyone is fully clothed, some little silly things have to happen. For example, Valentin, yeah. the other cop, just stands up and clearly is rock hard and just starts fucking, like, a typewriter through his jeans. Like, just humping a typewriter.
Okay.
And I was like, Anne is reinventing the form, I suppose. Like, that is for somebody.
Creativity. That, yes, exactly. Somebody's going to be, like, interested in watching that and turned on, but... It
like
is
how
a,
many people?
A left turn.
Right. Because you have to have somebody not only is into somebody having sex with their jeans fully on, but also having sex with a typewriter.
With a typewriter.
And I just got to feel like you're not, that's a very niche audience, but I imagine they're very grateful for the material if
of
they
course.
Exist.
Yes.
Anne is thrilled by this scene. She yells, cut, and she applauds wildly. And whenever she's like, when we get back for break, we'll shoot the porno shots, which I'm assuming means we're going to shoot where you actually have sex with each other right. for my new film. And the new film is called Anal Fury, which is so vague.
Wow.
But I suppose if there's no other porno yet with the name Anal Fury, you got to take it.
I think also, like, just like at that point, like when you think of how much porn is produced now versus before digitized film, before the internet, it's like, I think anal is enough to set it apart from the 30 other films that got made that year, as opposed to now where it's like, there are literally millions of videos that you can access at any time.
Right, with any possible name. Again, there probably is a lot more people having sex with typewriters with their jeans on than we even can fathom, right?
Absolutely.
So she traipses off. She's thrilled with what she's doing. And Archibald sees the Mouth of Gold sobbing in the corner of the set. He goes over to comfort him. And he's like, what's wrong, Mouth of Gold? And Mouth of Gold says, why is she doing this? This is Carl's murder. Like, why would she turn this into a porno? Like,
I mean,
we knew Carl.
Very valid concern.
Yeah, and that's sort of going to be a theme in the movie is, like, Anne is sort of, like, just so committed to her art that she just doesn't see the problem with this. And, you know, Mouth of Gold saying, like, I knew Carl. He told me all the sort of details of his life. And Archibald says, well, do you think you might know who could have done this? And Mouth of Gold said, no, I don't think so, because if I did, I would tell the police. I have no concept of who could have done this.
Right.
And he starts crying. He's like, I'll be honest, like, I loved him, you know? And he was beautiful. And then they go, hey, Mouth of Gold on set. This knob isn't going to slob itself. And he's like, excuse me. And then he goes and sucks
dick. Duty calls.
Which I think is at least a nice distraction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In these trying times, at least to be able to suck 1 to 3 dicks. It seems like a nice treat, you know?
Yeah.
Tiri was the one who played the typewriter fucking cop. I will say there are a lot of white French gentlemen in this movie who look very similar, so please bear with me.
Yes.
So it was actually Thierry who played the typewriter fucking cop, and he demands his paycheck from Anne. She says, well, I don't have the money today. Tomorrow I'll pay you. It's like, you can't yell at them and also not pay them. This is France, people. They will riot.
Yeah, they will riot.
He will burn this shit down. And he's like, you need me and you need my hard cock to finish this fucking day. And she says, you'll never work for me again. But then she does pay him because she does need his hard cock for the shoot. She's like, I can't argue with that.
We're at work.
And the AD walks back in. He's like, the dailies are ready. And she snatches it from him and runs and takes it up to Louise herself to sort of be like, look, I'm doing something different, Louise. Maybe now you'll love me. It's like, girl, that's go to AA. They had that back then, I think.
Yeah. I think. Something.
And the Mouth of God, Jose is getting, a blowjob from Mouth of God. And he says to Mouth of God, like, by the way, how much do you get paid for this? And Mouth of God says, oh, I don't need to be paid. I live with my mom. I was like, living the dream, Mouth of God. Wow. Like, you really figured this out. Also, just what does your mom think rent. You do every day?
Yeah. Where do you tell her you're off to?
What do you think you're going to do? And upstairs, we see Anne. She's about to go in the edit bay. And then she stops. And we just hear her go, Louise. Like, even she's like, I can't face Louise with my new porno. Oh, I love her so much. Unfortunately, Allison, that night we follow Thierry. And he does go buy heroin. And he sort of nods off in an abandoned convertible, very French. And I did say, this is what I think Paris is. We're just, there's an abandoned, 100%. Beautiful convertible.
Yeah, you can just hop in.
And we see Louise, she's going out tonight. She's going to a lesbian bar. And Anne follows her. So Anne is maybe stalking Louise a little bit at this point.
Yeah, well, that's not a surprise.
And inside this dance, like where they go to, there's like this incredible queer dance off where like everyone's dancing in their own little group where like everyone, it's like three people who have matching outfits and are dancing in their own way, which I do think is fun.
Into that.
And it's very Studio 54 on a very tight budget. And Anne goes to the mezzanine and she watches this beautiful black woman in like silver shorts, very like 70s, dancing alone. And all of a sudden a throng of people surround her and start dancing with her. And I just took it to be like, Anne is like so stuck in her own world. She can't even enjoy like what should be a space of like, all right, well, I have to move on. You know, but it's like, no, I'm here to like follow my ex-girlfriend. And yes. All this queer happiness or like beauty, I can't internalize any of it. Allison, back in the convertible, Thierry wakes up to find a black bird perched on the seat behind him. Allison, at that point, if you were him, what would you do?
What would you do?
I'm killing the bird. Even though I don't know what else the bird, you know, has already witnessed.
What do you think the bird is going to, is maybe harbinging? Harbinging? If you were to guess when that bird shows up, what do you think is going to happen to Thierry?
He's going to die.
He's
going to die. That guy's going to show up in the mask.
Yeah, he is.
And stab him with the dildo knife, I would assume. Or some other clever, sexy weapon.
You know what, Allison, you're dead on. And that's the thing about this movie is, like, there are not a lot of moments for people to decide what to do because this motherfucker is everywhere. And that is kind of a hallmark of the giallo is the, like, the logic of it and, like, what happens is sort of arbitrary. It really is about these, like, beautifully staged, garish, gory, sexy murders.
Yeah.
Which is less satisfying, perhaps, to the modern audience, but, again, is all about, like, the staging and everything. So back in the club, Anne sees like a very sexy dressed up Louise dancing in the crowd and grinding with the women in silver. And we started to have this moment like, is this really happening? Or is like Anne's obsession like calling this mind like
over.
Louise is out here talking to other like having sex with other women. Like, you know, it's sort of driving her insane. Unfortunately, Thierry looks up to find the masked man standing over him and the masked man shoves his dildo in Thierry's mouth. And when he does, Allison, we look up. And we see the masked man grinding his teeth and then sort of making a high-pitched screaming noise, which does call to mind birds. But it also, do you remember in Home Alone 2 when Marv touches the electrical, like he gets electrocuted and he screams and he turns to a skeleton? It's kind of like, oh, there's a lot of that. Okay. So just imagine that combined with birds screaming. So as you can imagine, it's just about if you were nodding off in a convertible.
Chaos.
Just about the worst shit you could wake up to is what I'm saying. Not just a guy with a dildo in your mouth. A man in a leather mask screaming like a bird. And unfortunately, you know this where this is going, Allison. He flicks the end of the dildo and the knife dildo stabs the back of Thierry's head. Back at the edit bay, we see Anne drive home, drive back to the porn set, and then go into the edit bay and take some of the film, which is, again, like, this is Louise's life's work, and she starts scratching at some of the scenes. She's carving things into the scenes, ostensibly to fuck with Louise or, like, to get back at her, you know. In the morning, we see Thierry's butchered body is still in the car.
That's tough.
Back on set, we see Archibald is again playing porno Anne, and she's the phone booth, again looking fabulous in the trench. But this time she's calling the detective, who's played by Nance, the guy from The Quarry. So he's like, listen, I'm not going to not take $2,000 to get my dick sucked. What am I insane? Yeah. So he's now playing the detective. And since Thierry has gone up to the big gangbang in the sky, they do need another hard cock. And
R.I.P.
You know, and Porno Ann calls the detective. It's like, how are you going to find the murderer? And the detective says, I'm going to meet my informer who knows the identity of the killer at the sauna at midnight. And Porno Ann says, how steamy, which is very Samantha from Sex and the City.
Yeah, that is giving, I can hear a Kim Cattrall line read of that.
Kim Cattrall in like a Bee Giallo, heaven.
Yeah. I mean, for all of the many issues with Sex and the City and all of the kind of like eye roll about like how she...
Yeah.
Her acting made that all work.
It's not supposed to be realistic. Like, she's playing, like, she's playing...
A heightened, like, super sexual...
Yeah, like a Marilyn Monroe, practically. Like, she's playing... Yeah, no, obviously no woman is like that. It's supposed to be funny, you know?
Right, she's playing for comedy. Like, she's a comedy actress.
She's an incredible comedic actress.
She's a really good actress.
We will not hear anything against her, okay? Also, my birthday was last week, and I kept saying all day, happy birthday to me, to basically no one for no reason.
It's so easy to just fall into kind of her voice patter for certain lines.
It's so satisfying. So, Porno Ann tells the detective, like, I appreciate all the hard work you're putting in. And then they proceed to have phone sex while the detective is getting blowjob from just some guy.
Just some guy.
And then the scene ends with simultaneous Porno Ann, who again is being played by Archibald, and the detective having perfectly simultaneous self facials from a standing position. And I was like, now that people would see a porno to see that because
simultaneous
it is
they're standing.
They're standing and they're jerking. One of them's jerking off, the other one's getting blown up, coming up into their own faces.
I mean, the standing is what makes that so shocking.
And at the exact same time. Again, Anne is actually a pretty good director if you let her follow her muse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we cut to Louise, who's editing it, and she's loving it. And she's like, Anne, every day you're crazier than X. So it's kind of like the lesson here is if you want to impress your lesbian ex, make the best gay porno the world has ever known based on your former leading man's still unsolved murder, because she's going to love it.
That's a rom-com.
And we see Louise, like, watching it, and at the end of the film she's cutting, we see Anne step in to call cut, and she's so happy. And Louise sees Anne smiling, and, like, clearly there's still feelings there.
Of course.
It's just that Anne's a mess, you know what I mean? Unfortunately, as Louise looks, she then gets to the specific cells where Anne has scratched in a drunken rage. And there are pictures of Thierry as a cop, and he's getting head in this scene, and she's scratched into it, you have killed me.
So that Louise would see it?
Yes.
Okay.
Louise, as an editor, and also someone who doesn't know she's in a horror movie, is shocked by this.
Yes, of course.
It's like, girl, two people have already been brutally murdered. Like, there's going to be a lot of crazy things afoot, you know?
Yeah, you got to be prepared now.
Unfortunately, the AD comes through the door and tells Louise they found Thierry, and he has been murdered. That night, Anne, Archibald, and then two guys, the cameraman Francois, and then another guy from the crew, Raba, they all go out to a bar, and they start to hypothesize, like, well, so what the fuck happened, you know? And Archibald is insisting that has nothing to do with the porno company. Both Thierry and Carl had debts. They were, you know, out here living life. They had enemies. Like, there's really, unfortunately, it seems like there's someone's praying a gay man, but it doesn't mean it's just... It's about the
specific
company.
To the film. Yeah.
And then Anne says, and she's got a big smile. She's like, what if instead of anal fury, we call it homicidal? Get it, like, homicidal? And Francois, who did bring his camera to the bar, so I guess you know he's the cameraman.
Yeah.
Francois goes, do you not care at all? Like, these are two people we fucking know,
people
dude.
You
like,
know
what are you doing?
Are dead.
But they're interviewed with this woman who's like looks at Frances Kelly and is like, "Are you in film? I'd love to be an actress. Too bad I look like such a slut." And it was like, oh my God, this couldn't have been more fortuitous.
You're exactly what we need.
But Archibald's not having it. Archibald's like, don't bother, honey. Any woman that's going to be in our movies is going to have a dick, so we're not interested. Yeah. But Rabba, who just wants to like get laid, says, actually, I think we could probably work something out. And he and the woman start making out. And Anne starts laughing at Francois because I guess he's in a relationship with Rabba. And it's like, oh, all your boy toys into being straight. And he's like, we can both sleep with whoever we want. It's not a big deal. But of course, he's furious that he's just making out in front of him. Just then, a group of trans women enter, and Archibald recognizes one of them as a former star of their movies. And she joins them, and she's going by, I'm going to say, it's M-I-S-I-A, so I'm going to say Missia. I don't know how a French person would pronounce it. This is what I have. And she's sort of saying, like, oh, yes, she's basically doing sex work with her friends. And it's sort of like, here's sort of our niche that we've sort of caught on to. Petu, she's sort of like the social worker type. You know what I mean? She wants to calm clients down, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, she's great if you have an orgy. She's super friendly.
Sure.
Farida's like the Arabian princess. Like, she promises you 101 nights, but you're going to be coming in 30 seconds. So don't worry. You'll get your money's worth. And then we have Dominique, who's like this like icy blonde sort of dominatrix bitch. It's like she's a head bitch in charge. She's high class, but don't piss her off. And I was like, I would like to see the Charlie's Angels spinoff of these ladies.
Yes.
And Anne says, okay, so if that's their specialty, what is your specialty, Missia? And Missia says, I'm in search of mysteries. This is what I think France is. This is exactly what I think France is.
This is what I think France is.
Me? I'm in search of mysteries. Okay.
Okay.
And so Anne's like, okay, great. So you all have a thing. And she approaches the other women and says, do you want to be in pictures? $200 a scene. And they're like, bitch, I can make that in an hour. Like, you better be giving me more money. $200 a scene? And we know that she'd offered Nan's $500 a scene. So they're like, you better be offering us more money or we are not fucking doing this.
Yes.
But apparently she did, because then we are cutting to sort of like, we're back on set, and it's like this blue haze. It's all these like white curtains billowing with a blue light. And we see a man going down a Messiah. And then we see the person, we're the POV of like the killer, right?
Right.
And we see the killer's wearing a white sequin glove, pulling her lover's hair, forcing him to stand up. And I was like, bitch, if we have to deal with Michael Jackson showing up on set.
No.
Because that is what is, like, when you see a white bedazzled glove, like, that's the only thing that comes to mind.
It does predate the glove in the film timeline.
So maybe Michael Jackson saw this film and was inspired. That seems more plausible. Yes. Okay, great.
Actually, very much.
And then the person, like, goes through the gauzy curtains, and we see Valentine. He's making out with his own reflection, and the glove kind of grabs his face and pushes him away. And then finally, the hand opens the curtain. We see Dominique, and she's flogging a man who's down on all fours. And the hand kind of just lets Dominique do her thing. The hand's not going to get involved, get in the middle of that.
Yeah, no, the hand has, you know, boundaries. And
unfortunately, we reverse now on the gloved man, and we see, of course, it's the porno version of the masked killer. Now, nobody has seen the masked killer, so it's like, how would Anne know this? How would she intuit it? And I think we're supposed to think from the dreams that, like, she is, like, interpreting things that she doesn't necessarily know that she knows.
Okay.
Which is another part of giallo movies. It's like, sometimes they're playing at supernatural stuff, but then it's revealed not to be. Sometimes it's unresolved.
Okay.
But we have the masked killer, and we see him raise his knife, and he's gunned down by the detective and Porno Anne. And Porno Anne reaches down and takes off the killer's mask to reveal the actual Anne. And Porno Anne goes, oh, it's the Far West box office girl. They show all my films there. And Dominique says, she came here all the time. She saw so many gay flicks. She thought she was a fag. And I'm like, all right, now things are getting interesting.
This is definitely interesting.
And Dominique says, she was a mother during the day, a murderess at night, a sickness on the rise. And Anne calls cut, and they all applaud. It's a wrap, Allison.
I mean, that's a movie.
Now, that's a movie. Michael Jackson movie. Gave it five stars.
Five gloves.
He gave it five hee-hees. Archibald tells everyone, okay, Sunday we're going to do a picnic wrap party. And I'm like, this sounds really fun. I know someone's going to get murdered at it, but like a picnic for a wrap party, I don't know. I was like, that's really sweet.
I like that.
And Anne goes,
I mean, I don't like what'll definitely happen, but I like a picnic.
And Anne goes to Francois, like, was I good? I didn't look too wilted, did I? And he goes, no, Louise will love it. It's like, oh, girl, don't tell her that, you know?
No, don't feed that.
later we see Anne get fucking plastered at like a more traditional bar, like, you know, like wooden bar with a little stage and a bunch of little tables, not the dance bar we were at before. And a woman asks her to dance, and Anne says, "Forget it, honey, I'm taken." But of course, the bartender knows that she's not, because she's clearly in here every other fucking night, and pours Anne another drink. On stage, we see sort of a comedic, sexy vignette of an older woman in a see-through leotard with her titties out, and then a woman in a bear costume, and performs what I would say is the most lesbian French drag number one can imagine. And the audience is like, oh, hooray, yes, this is normal for us, this is what drag is here. And the bear's, like, clawing at the woman. And it's sort of like a bear from the waist up and then, like, sexy fishnet lady legs from the waist down.
Very, very hot.
And very French. And the bear says,
very French,
"If you turn me on, I'll devour you with my claws." And it's all this thing where it's, like, conflating, like, sexuality with, like, being devoured. And it's, like, pawing at this woman. And finally, like, pretends to claw the woman. And fake blood starts spraying all over the other woman's body. And she says, "The more I kill you, the more I love you." And that's the thing in France, they play this shit on PBS over there. Okay, for us, this is a little scandalous.
Children's programming.
Yeah, exactly. On Sunday, the cast and crew all go to the picnic, and Nans kind of falls asleep on the blanket, and Valentina and Francois are like, he looks exactly like that old leading man, Fouad, but he swears they're not related. But the fact they're bringing it up for a second time, like, okay, well, that's going to come up later, you know?
Well, it's not nothing.
And the trans gals show up with a bunch of, like, champagne bottles hidden under their clothes. And Frida pretends to go into labor and starts screaming and gives birth to a bottle of booze. Okay, and then everyone applauds.
So much fun.
And Messia goes to sit with Anne and tells her, like, you know, if I wasn't a whore, I would be a palm reader. And Anne's like, I don't know if I believe in that. I don't know.
Why can't you do both?
Exactly. And Messia takes Anne's palm and tells her, you know, and also, honey, this is exactly how real palm readers work, because she goes, you know, I could tell that you're not moving on from the past, okay? It seems like you're stuck in the past. It's like, yeah, bitch, you were in some of her films. Clearly, she's stuck in it. And it's like, you have to forget your old fears and follow the path of your dreams. Unfortunately, Allison, then Louise shows up. And even in that moment of Anne being like, yeah, maybe I should move on. Oh, my God, Louise is here. Like, she has no, you need to be
chaos.
Like, yeah. And so, and Anne's sort of sobbing, like, a little bit as she's getting her palm read, because she just, it's like, all this is true. Like, she can't move on. And Louise sees it. It's like, I know she's crying about me because, like, of how fucked up she is. We broke up. Allison, a blackbird lands on Louise's shoulder. And a storm rolls in. And Louise grabs Anne, and everyone's trying to, like, rescue the picnic. And it sort of scatters into the trees. And finally, after all the gay fucking and sucking, we get one lesbian kiss, because Louise and Anne are under a tree, and Louise kisses Anne, and I'm like, Louise, what are you doing?
This is not good. Not a good idea. She seems so in control and on top of the situation for most of this movie so far.
But, you know, she tells Anne, I shouldn't have done that, but I love you. I will always love you. So, of course, Anne's like, all right, this is my end. And Anne tries to kiss her again, but Louise resists. And it's like, we shouldn't stand under a tree in the storm. We might catch on fire. It's like, okay. And eventually she just leaves. She's like, I have a train to catch. I have to go. And Anne says, I'll drive you. It's raining. She's like, no, I have to leave. So, of course.
So French.
I know. Like, French lesbians, I can only imagine. Unfortunately, during this, it's like a rain shower that stops, and Messia has gotten separated from the group because everyone's kind of scattered under the trees and is calling for everyone, but is alone in a clearing. And of course, doesn't see that a figure is approaching from behind her. And Elsa, you're not going to believe it. It's the goddamn killer. Okay.
Of course.
And as the rain starts to fall, the killer stabs Messia in the back and then kisses her as she dies before putting her body on the ground. And then we see the killer just fucking running through the forest as Anne drives home. She goes to the dance bar we saw before, which is called The Future. So again, we're supposed to be like, go to the future, move into the future.
Out of course,
Anne is fucking blackout drunk. She shows up just as Louise is leaving. It's torrentially raining. And Anne starts screaming at her. It's like, I've loved you this hard for 10 years. It is driving me insane. You have to love me. You have to love me. And she grabs Louise. Louise tries to push her away. Anne grabs Louise by the throat and chokes her against a wall. And Louise is trying to fight her off, Anne grabs her breasts and then between her legs and screams, "This is mine." And she only stops when a blackbird sort of flies by and distracts her, and Louise is able to run away. So she has fully sexually assaulted this woman that she loves, right?
Yes.
Not that, like, it looks like they were going to get together, but now it's like, oh, you have crossed this line that is, yeah.
You don't come back from this.
Exactly. So, inside the bar, hours later, Anne is passed out in a booth, and one of the performers from the Bear drag show comes and shows her the morning's paper. It's a report on Messiah's murder. So that's a third person who has worked for their company who has been murdered by a killer, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she goes to the station. She starts screaming at Martini, like, okay, this is obvious. Someone is targeting my fucking cast and my former cast members. This is on you. You have to fucking solve it. Mm-hmm. And Martini, it's obviously the reason they're not solving it is because of homophobia and transphobia. And he says,
of course.
You know, we're working really hard. So in the meantime, why don't you go tell your little friends to stay home and stay inside? Because it's just safer that way. So basically, fuck you. We're not trying that hard, bitch. Get out of my fucking station, you know?
Yeah, maybe don't go outside anymore. And it's like, ugh.
I know. So Anne goes out to smoke and she's upset. And the younger cop sneaks out and says, you know, I just want to let you know. And I think the implication is that he is gay and so he's more sympathetic. And he's like, on the first two bodies, they found bird feathers. And she's like, well, clearly that's like, they should be using it to solve it. He's like, well, the case isn't a priority. And he didn't say why, but like, y'all are queers. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he says, I could give you one of them. And he gives her one of the feathers. He's like, I can't do anything, but if you can find someone to identify it, maybe it'll be help solve it, you know? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, she's at Archibald's. Archibald's like, no one wants to work with us. We are hemorrhaging money because everyone keeps fucking publicly getting murdered, right? So this is bad for business, baby.
Yeah.
And she tells Archibald, get the phone book and look up birds. And he says, this is the phone book. It's not an encyclopedia. And she said, sorry, bird shops. We need someone to identify this feather. And luckily, they're able to call somebody. And this is, again, if you're calling someone in France, this is how you have to meet them. She goes to the middle of the woods in front of, like, a weird old church or obelisk of some sort.
Oh, of course. Meet me at the obelisk.
Meet me at the obelisk in the middle of the goddamn woods. I own a...
What if we kissed under the obelisk in the woods?
I mean, pure romance. Unfortunately, we're just here to identify bird feathers.
Okay.
And she meets a woman. I'm not even going to... Her name is Louise Sillerier. Okay, that wasn't so bad. Okay.
Yeah,
that's probably all wrong. And she's a bird expert, of course. Probably lives in the woods. And she has brought her handsome son, Pierre. And they take a look. And he's like a bird expert, right? And she hands him, it's like, here's a feather. It's like, they got it. And this is like every episode of SVU or like Bones, where luckily it's the exact most unusual bird feather that they could only come from one place.
Yeah, always.
So Pierre looks at her. He's like, oh, it's a chaladre feather or a white-eyed grackle. They're all blind birds.
A blind bird?
Blind birds.
So they
Allison.
Haven't seen anything that's actually happened.
Exactly. I said, like, so they don't know all the people are getting fucking and sucking and getting murdered?
They bring think a they're book. Just like.
Bring a little book for your little bird book, for your little bird feet. Oh, yeah. How do you fly? I don't know.
Yeah. Bats are blind and they fly around.
Well, they have echolocation. What do maybe birds have? Don't they have magnets and they can use the, they can follow the magnetic.
They got magnetic.
Yeah. Okay. So he tells him, resolved. The last sighting of these grackles was in the 18th century in the Chaladre forest. And they tell her, it's like, there's a story that used to take dying people there and leave them there overnight. Which, well, okay.
Okay. The birds, I guess that's a place.
The birds would absorb their sickness. And so the person would survive and they would fly to the sun. But Allison, they flew too close, and that's where they all went blind. And I wrote, this is what I think France is. Just that kind of stuff.
Just that shit happening all the time.
Then the moment in this movie that was most pleasing to me, Pierre takes his left hand out of his jacket pocket. Allison, this motherfucker has a bird's hand.
What does that mean?
It is a cross. It's a human hand, but it is a bird's claw at the same time. It has, like, it's ridged. It has talons, like nails.
But it's still, like, the size of a human hand and has five fingers.
And he reaches out. He doesn't even say anything. He just touches Anne on the face, and she looks like, oh, okay. Like, she's like, all right, this is a little too far here, dude.
Like, in a way that it's like, he did that? or like that happened to him.
So his mother and so says, "Don't be afraid. Pierre has a
rare." I'm afraid.
Pierre has a rare disorder. It starts with the hands, and then he begins to mutate. And okay. If you think
so,
that
we've left reality.
I would say if you think this is going to come back again, it has anything to do with the plot. It does not. We are moving on. We now see we see Anne's dream, so we know she's dreaming again. And it looks like the killer, the curly mop killer, is kissing this young. First, I was like, is that Anne? But I think it's just a young blonde man. And they're kissing and sort of passionately in a barn. Anne wakes up as they announce the next train stop. Luckily, it's a Chelandrae forest. She gets off. It's the middle of the goddamn night. She just has a suitcase and her trench. And she just is dark. And in her bag, she finds a letter from Louise that she didn't know was there. And in the letter, Louise says, "If you're reading this, Archibald must have followed my instructions and put my letter here. Mm-hmm. I loved you for 10 years, but last night you destroyed that when you sexually assaulted me." Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to see you dead. I want to hurt you the way you hurt me, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to cry and I'm going to move on. We have to be untied. We cannot do this. So she says, "I can't work with you anymore. I'm going to finish this movie. After I finish editing Homicidal, I'm going to leave. Do not contact me. Do not seek me out." And it's like, what else is she supposed to do? Like, it's like,
I mean,
that's best case scenario. She says, "Don't fucking talk to me ever again after what you did."
And she doesn't.
Right. Exactly. You know, Anne's not going to abide by that because she's deranged. But luckily, a man shows up and he's like, "Hi, I'm Mr. Vineyard. Archibald reserved you a room in my inn and I thought I'd come collect you because it's the middle of the goddamn night."
Okay.
And he takes her home, introduces her to his daughter, Kathy, who's clearly a dyke. And I was like, I hope Kathy gets to live a life. But she seems like she stays at home. She's 40 years old. She's like, "I can't leave because I have to take care of my dad."
Yeah.
But I could show you where the forest is. So in the morning, they walk to the forest. And Kathy's like, "Oh, one time I went to Paris as a child. It was incredible. But I've never left again." And Anne's drinking. And she offers it to Kathy and says, "In the morning? Well, okay." So they're just getting drunk at 9 in the morning. And Kathy says, "It's right over there." And Anne says, "Could you stay behind? Because I'm just going to walk in." I'm not exactly sure at this point what she thinks is going to happen, but here we are. And Kathy says, "Are you sure it's like really vast? Like, I wouldn't want to get it lost." But Anne says, "No." Luckily, Anne immediately stops to get drunk under a tree, like you do.
As you do.
And finds a cemetery nearby. And there's a woman in a gown praying at a grave.
Great.
And then leaves. And as Anne approaches the grave, it says, "Guy." His name is.
You starting that's stopping immediately. It's
well, I realize like his
guy.
Name is,
okay,
it's Guy Favre, 1948 to 1964, and I believe that means he is Brett Favre's ancestor. Like, I believe this is Brett Favre's great uncle. You know,
yeah.
And we see like in her dream, we see Guy. And then what appears, is it Nans? Is it the killer? Again, like, they've clearly hired people who have multiple people with curly brown hair. And be like, who is it? You know? And Anne comes to, and it's nightfall. She's still at this grave. And the woman she saw earlier, who is dressed like Blanche Devereaux going out to, like, get fucked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, where it's like kind of like an 80s, early, I guess late 70s, like sort of a nightgown with sequins on it. And she's like, "Oh, you must have known my son, Guy. You must be his friend. Where is he? You look like you're from the city because here we dress like this." It's like, does that make any sense? I don't know.
Nope.
It's like, "You must be from the city. Does Guy live in Paris? Why else would you come out here unless you knew my son?" And Anne says, "I'm sorry, I'm drunk and I don't know." And runs back and is able to make it back to Kathy's car. And Kathy drives her back and says, "Oh, yeah, that was Guy Favre's mom. She went insane." She tells Anne, and this is a story, is that Guy Favre was a young gay man in their town, and he was sort of having a love affair with his friend Hisham, and they died tragically in a fire 15 years ago after a barn mysteriously caught fire. Immediately after that, Guy Favre's mom went crazy, and Guy Favre's dad died by suicide. And the strange thing is, Allison, Guy's body was never found. And his mother never really believed that he died. Allison, who will survive this film?
Who will survive?
I think Louise will live because I think she hit the bricks. Mm-hmm. I think Anne is unfortunately going to die. And
how about Archibald?
Who's Archibald again?
He's the guy who's been playing Porno Anne. He's like her right-hand man, yes, assistant.
I think he will also... No, I think it's him and he's trying to like single white female.
Ooh,
her.
Okay, great.
And then who else is left?
We got Nons, the guy that she hired from the quarry.
I think he's going to die after we think he's the killer.
Okay,
and then
great.
Get killed by the killer.
Okay, great. And then everyone else, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, all right, you know.
So Kathy drops Anne off and it was like, could I have one more sip of liquor? Anyways, must be nice living in the big city with one other gay person. Well, I have to go take care of my dad. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Meanwhile, back in Paris, we see Louise is up late editing, trying to get the movie done, and the phone rings. And she's like, ugh. She refuses to answer because it's probably Anne. It is Anne. And we see Anne is at the inn, basically, like, struggling. Louise is not picking up, and she asks Mr. Veneer for a bottle of whiskey. And he's like, I will give you a bottle of whiskey if you promise not to lure Kathy away with your lesbian ways to the city, because she wants to leave and let me die here, but I need her to stay. And,
yeah.
And to her credit, it's like, bitch, I don't want to know anything about this. I have so much going on. There's something I can tell you. When Anne gets back to her room, Kathy has written her a card and left her dried flowers and two newspaper clippings. And is also watching her from another window. And in the letter, it's like, I just want to say thanks so much. It was really nice meeting just like one other lesbian and really made me think about my life. And here are these newspaper clippings about Guy Favre's mysterious disappearance after the barn fire. Hope it's helpful. Luckily, Allison, it gives Anne an idea for a film.
Of course it does.
And she calls Archibald and says, I'm going to be back at set. Let's set up some auditions. The idea is called Hex Rated. And we see a scene of it.
A great title.
Absolutely. And it looks like Archibald is being whipped by two sort of like devilish priests in hell, like satanic priests.
On va pouvoir le baisser à volonté.
Everyone's having a great time. And we see Louise up in the edit bay. And she's editing the final scenes of Homicidal.
Okay.
And with all the curtains. And she sees a figure in the background. And she realizes that must be the killer. The killer must have been stalking the set.
In the film.
In the film.
Okay.
So she's like,
scary.
Oh, shit. Suddenly the lights go out, Allison. And we realize that it's just because they turn off the lights for Hex Rated, but then the lights are off in the rest of the building. So Louise comes down, finds the fuse box, but the rats have eaten the wires. And Hex Rated throws the lights back on. And Jose, one of the porn actors, has had his throat slashed. The killer is in the room.
Oh, my God.
And whirls around, and the masked killer is there, and he lunges for her. And as he does, Louise steps in front of the knife to save Anne's life. And he plunges his knife dildo into Louise's chest instead of Anne's. And then he scampers away.
Oh, I didn't want that to happen.
I know. Louise, she did her best. She absolutely did her best. She
drew boundaries.
An incredible
artist. Was good at her job. Yeah.
And Anne sobs and says, why did you come here? I would have changed. We could have had more time. Just stay alive. Stay with me. I'm going to cry. It's like, stay with me and I'll protect you for the rest of my life. Yeah. Girl, you know Louise is dead.
Yeah.
Sometime later, Anne, whose entire life has fallen apart, obviously, goes to see a screening of Homicidal. And it's the kind of thing where they're playing at porno theaters. So guys are there to like hook up and jerk off. And she's there to like get drunk and watch this and like sob, you know. And she weeps when she sees Louise's name as like the editor. Mm-hmm. And Nans is there as well because he's seeing the film because he's a star of it. And after the screening, we see Anne like crush her cigarette. She just keeps watching films because they're also playing her old stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a man approaches her and is like, oh, are you Anne Perez? You're a genius. I love all your fucking films. And she says, it was all Louise. She was the real genius. And the man says, Louise? And Anne's like, I can't talk to you. I can't give you the whole backstory.
No.
Please.
No.
So then there are guys like jerking off and like watching each other jerk off. But Anne is just in the front, treat yourself. And occasionally the guys look at her like, yikes. Okay. Like, we're here with a purpose. Like, this is sad, you know? And a guy sits next to Nans and is like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm sitting next to the famous Fouad. And Nans like, no, you wouldn't be the first to confuse us, but I'm not him. The guy leaves, and we see behind him, clearly our killer, Allison. It is someone who is bundled up to the eyes and has a trucker head on, and it's his skin looks like he's been, I don't know, burned in a barn fire.
Okay.
So obviously it's Guy Favre, okay? Anne watches the movie, but at the end of Homicidal, when they sort of take off the mask, it's Louise. So she sort of jerks around. She's like, oh, my God. And she looks in everyone else in the theater is the corpse of all the murder victims. And she screams. Of course, she's having a dream.
Okay.
And she sees Nans, but he doesn't reply. And Nans goes upstairs where there's sort of like a sex room. And you pay $3 and it's like a sexy dark room. And everyone gets a red flashlight. And you just shine it on each other to find people to fuck. I was like, okay, fun. Mixing it up.
All right.
Unfortunately, Allison, another person follows him in and pays $3. It's the killer. Downstairs, Anne is watching one of her earlier films, Spunk in the Land Alone. And we see that it follows the story of Guy and Hashem. And I don't know if we're supposed to think that she intuited this story and that's why she was drawn into this.
The real one?
That's the only way I could sort of piece it together. Alternately, the movie itself is different, but in her sort of fugue state, she's seeing it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So either one kind of works for me.
Unfortunately, we see the plot, and the plot is that Guy's father found him with Hashem, and they're like in love. Like they are like, you know, 18 or whatever. They're in love. They are having sex, but like it is clearly like a beautiful love affair. He attacks them, kills Hashem, and castrates his son. But in the porno version, the dad drops the knife and instead of castrating his son, kisses his son. And then we sort of see the barn on fire. And in the porno version, the dad also is nude. And it's just they're all holding hands and running around the flames and nobody's dead. So of course,
I like that ending much more.
So we see that Carl is the star. Terry is the farmhand. The Boy Scout is Messia before she transitioned. And the dad is Jose. So everyone who has been killed was in this initial film, which depicted the guy story.
That we found out later. Yeah.
And it was Fouad's first movie. And Anne is sobbing. So I guess at this point, we already think this really is a movie that she made. And she didn't know that she was telling the story. And and she doesn't understand what's going on. Nan's upstairs smoking and trying to hook up in the red room. And we hear someone sobbing and coming towards them. And the guy's like, oh, sorry. I think you like mistake me for someone else. The killer's trying to kill Nan's because he looks so much like Fouad. Because the killer is Guy. So the guy has seen this movie and is like, they made a movie out of like, again, my torture and my lover's murder. I'm going to kill everyone who thought you could use my real life story for entertainment.
Yes.
Luckily, Anne realizes kind of what's going on and she runs up the stairs and busts it and says, he's the killer. The killer's right there. So Guy, who we now know is the killer, grabs a man and takes the man hostage and drags him down in the screening theater, which, by the way, is full of furious gay men who know all the who know that people have been being murdered. And she said, that's the killer. That's who, the person who's been terrorizing not just the our company, but the entire gay community of Paris. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the guy who the hostage is able to escape Guy's clutches. But the rest of the crowd descend on Guy and he says, you get up on killing fags, huh? And then they beat up Guy basically to a bloody pulp.
Oof.
And Guy, he has a knife, of course. He drops it, and it's picked up by Nans, and he stabs Guy as retribution Nans stabs Guy to death for basically killing all these queer people.
Yes.
And we get this epilogue flash as they all stand over his body, and of course, a grackle lands on Guy's chest. And we get this, and I think we're supposed to be like, you know, like he did do all this horrible stuff, but now we're sympathetic, and we sort of
also
see
Guy
and Hashem's romance. It's like theirs was a sacred love, theirs was a secret love, a world of infinite sweetness. And we see his father catching them, and it's horrible. And then the dad set the fire to hide his crimes, and it's like, bitch, that wasn't gonna work. So that's why the dad dies by suicide. Guy survived, Allison, completely burned, but the goddamn birds. Like we heard from the legend, took the sickness out of him. He doesn't look great, but he survived, right?
Oh.
And because of the birds, he survived and let him live. Unfortunately, Allison, he did forget his past, and he had to relearn language from the birds, which I guess is why he was screaming like a bird, is that he didn't have human language. So, but yeah, he still knew enough to like find a dildo and install a knife in it. He was able to get to the city. He was able to find the portal theater. Like he
purchased those things, allegedly. I mean, like,
yeah. And we hear this story and it's like Guy went to the city and he entered a theater and we see Guy and Shem sort of embrace their last embrace. And then we see this last scene. And I think this is sort of, I don't want to immediately assume everything is about AIDS, but I think this probably is at this point. We see this scene where it's a white space with a fountain and it's sort of like all these different men are sort of different, like threes and twos, like having sex. And Archibald has satyr legs. And it's sort of like this like Greek scene. Uh-huh. And it's the only scene where it's actually shot like it's like beautiful and hot. And I think because the rest of it, it's sort of like it's like behind the scenes. Like we're kind of joking while we're doing this.
Yeah.
But this is like, it's very beautiful. And like all the men's bodies are shot very beautifully. And, you know, the Mouth of Gold is there. All of our friends, it's kind of like the end of Wizard of Oz, sort of. Like all our friends are here.
Yeah.
And Anne turns and sees Louise and they kiss. And I think it's sort of like this exists. This is what exists in Anne's mind, and she puts it into a film because that's all she has control over. She doesn't have control over life. Her lover life, she assaulted and was murdered in front of her. So now it's like the film is all we sort of have in order to, you know, like have control. And then Louise is sort of led away. I presume to heaven in this scenario,
I guess.
And all the lights go on and all the gay porn actors look around. And I think that we're supposed to think this is the arrival of AIDS. But Archibald sort of has tears in his eyes and he smiles at Anne and she smiles back, tears in her eyes. And there is this moment of like, we're still here. Sorry, I'm going to cry. Oh, you think there was crying at other months? This month is going to be insane.
This is going to be a tough month.
But yeah, so that is the end. Allison, what are some fatal mistakes you think that anyone may have made in Knife and Heart?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, I do think that, like, making the movies tied to the real murder going on, even though that's not exactly what led to what was happening, like, I do think that was a bad thing to do.
You have unsolved murders
of people you know, and you're exploiting it for the art you make, even if it's making something like good. It ultimately feels like that's not something you should do. And is, of course, you know, why the murder, even though that wasn't really what was happening because she wasn't there and knowing that story at the time, like it is like, it's like just work from up here, start up in your head, start something new, use fantasy, like maybe let's not use trauma and horror to
get off,
you know, depict, you know, fantasy.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think that but it does feel like this is something that could happen where it's like true crime, but porn. Like you have The Staircase, but it is a porno. That doesn't seem so impossible.
No, not at all. And you know that those are already out there.
Yeah. Remember when, like, somewhere. I feel like porn parodies were kind of big. I guess when people were buying DVDs, like, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, late 90s, early 2000s feels like porn parody was at its height. And then the references to porn parody in comedy were, like,
nonstop.
Then kind of, it was just a snake eating itself.
Exactly. And,
I guess that would be the big one for me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because Anne, again, like she just had no grasp. Like the movies were her only method of control because she had no control of her life whatsoever. And like everything she tried slipped through her fingers. I guess for me, the other fatal mistake is homophobia.
Don't
attack your son and his lover. He will become a killer.
Yep.
And because you're already dead, he will take it out on other queer people. So, an important message for us all to remember. Always. Where would you rate Knife and Heart on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think I found this, like, very fun and exciting and interesting. I think, like, even though there is a lot, like, it's not a super high body count movie. Like, it is, but it's not in a way. I don't know. Like, it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's the difference between, like, a murder mystery and a horror movie.
Yes, totally. Like, it did have flashes of, like, Scream 2 for some reason. Or, like, the Screams 2 and 3 where it's, like, it's a movie about a murder. It's the film within the film that, like, we're kind of also paying attention to. So I feel like that is very fun. I think this is a 5.
Okay, good. I'm going to give this a 3. I will say I found all the bird stuff very unnerving. We've talked about this.
Very.
Grotesque. But other than that, like, I think as much as I love giallos or love sort of like a more mystery horror, the mystery element typically is less scary to me because you're not in it. Like, you're not, like, experiencing it with the protagonist. Yeah. You have these beats where you know they're safe. Like, they're at a bar. Yes. It's fine.
Right.
So you're not getting, like, constant sort of frenetic terror, which is what I look for in a film. So I'm gonna say three. I enjoyed this. I didn't know what it was. I hadn't seen it before, so I think it was
great.
A fun homage. I would say it's a B movie, but like, baby, who doesn't love a B movie?
That's great. You know? We love a B movie.
Yeah.
Well, here we are.
Thank you for joining us. We of course thankful to you all months, but I just say personally very thankful for you during Pride Month. I don't know, man. You know how things are, and we appreciate you listening and hearing what we have to say. And we know that you're with us in this. And go to votesaveamerica.com/fuckbans to donate your money, get involved. They're also like regional. If you're someone who wants to get involved more broadly, you could look up your region and see sort of different organizations if that's something you're interested in. I'm going to cry every episode.
Yep.
So just get ready.
That
and
kind of month.
Yeah. But until then, please keep it spooky. The birds are blind, Allison.
Ah!
Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. Ruined is a Radio Point and Crooked Media production. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolati.